It is only later on, after a certain period of time has passed, that they will come to find themselves living among others from different backgrounds, souls who speak a different language and who look quite different to themselves, and that they will begin to gain an understanding of souls other than themselves. Now I still have to tell you about the children, children of 2 years and above, I should say, who cause their teachers and those entrusted with their upbringing a good deal of trouble. These are children who will always do the opposite of what they are told, who are disobedient and uncooperative, and who have to be taken out of the group as soon as it is apparent that despite the devotion and dedication shown to them, they are failing to make any progress. They are taken to another village where other similarity difficult and badly behaved children are living and are looked after by proportionately more angels, whose task it is to practice an even greater level of devotion and unselfish care. I was told that these children are souls who have risen from the lower world before they entered the physical plane, and who, having left the earthly world again as little children, prove just as disobedient and antagonistic as they were before, and quite incapable of surrendering to the order of the divine world. Any imbalances or imperfections in the souls of such individuals can thus to some extent already be seen in childhood. It is for this reason that these children need to be brought up and educated with a particular degree of love and care. When their schooling is complete, they will then be prepared for a new life on earth and expected to do their best to demonstrate that their short earth life, and the careful education they received thereafter in the spiritual world, has led to important gains with respect to their future. In other words, it is hoped that all that the angels have done for these children by way of their painstaking and devoted care, will have succeeded in making them more amenable, and accepting of spiritual law. You can see, therefore, how a short life on earth is of great significance and very great value as far as the future spiritual development of the individual is concerned. I have been asked to explain to you why those souls who die after only a few days of earthly life should then enter the spiritual world as infants. This is a question I have asked myself, too. I have always imagined that with God anything was possible, and my understanding has been that the spirit of the individual concerned need not necessarily be unevolved but could in fact already have reached a certain maturity and retained that level of development. This is what I was told. When an individual is due for a fresh life on earth, he or she needs to undergo certain preparations beforehand. Each and every soul undergoes a certain transformation, and during this process of transformation the spiritual body, which in the spiritual realms has been, let us say, of normal, adult size, as is, for example, your own spiritual body, or that of your guardian angel, is, in a certain sense, contracted and reduced in size, to fit the physical body of the newborn infant I. The soul's thinking, too, is, as it were, put to sleep. Then, when the spiritual body comes together with the physical body, at the moment of birth I, the two can start growing in unison. The spiritual body will thus develop in parallel with the earthly. The thinking processes which have been placed under constraints now have to unfold and develop again, stage by stage. There follows a slow process of the soul's gradually freeing itself from the dependent state in which the individual has been placed. Bit by bit, with the passage of time, individuals regain the size and stature they had previously in the beyond, and their thinking unfolds and expands as they develop physically. Day-to-day impressions throughout the period of childhood influence thinking and motivation, and in this way both spirit and soul are shaped and formed. In every case, the individual's true state of spiritual development, which he or she will have been nurturing over the previous innumerable years, then begins to manifest. You must understand that the soul is in a constant state of development. The body which encloses the soul gives the soul the power and the opportunities it needs for this development. One can compare the soul to a tree one has planted in good soil, and which one is slowly training to grow in the best way possible. The tree does not improve overnight, but only reaches the desired state after a certain length of time. So it is with the soul. The spiritual body, together with the soul, needs to be allowed to grow along with the physical body, to develop in parallel with it. Should an individual die in childhood, for example, his or her spiritual body will have the size and character of the physical body of a child. And so, the spirit child will go on to grow up in the spirit world, looked after and supported throughout this period of development by beings of the divine world. And so, everything happens in the way it is meant, in accordance with God's will. People on earth have no proper understanding of these things. You must realize that all of you have many different lives behind you. Were individuals to become conscious of the memories they carry within them, were these memories no longer suppressed from their awareness, they would certainly be harmed. God wishes each and every one of you always to have the possibility of beginning your life afresh, anew. During the transformation that takes place prior to a new life on earth, memories are not so much removed as sealed off, so that it is only in rare cases that people are able, later, in their mature years, to get a glimpse of their true past. This is so in order that people may have the opportunity to begin their lives afresh, unencumbered by their previous ways of thinking, and so that they may have a greater chance to make rapid progress and truly give themselves to God. Such people will have fewer questions to ask, and fewer approaches to make, both of God and of their fellow human beings. In this way, people have only their immediate life to deal with, the life they have made for themselves up to this point, the life that stretches out before them, that they can put in order, and so forth. They are thus able to focus themselves completely on their own very personal life here and now, untroubled by all the events that lie in their past, whether or not such knowledge might have hindered or indeed helped them. And so, God gives to each the opportunity to begin life afresh. Then, when individuals eventually reach spiritual maturity, an unlocking of their souls takes place and all constraints to their thinking are removed, enabling a further process of unfolding and development. It is then that individuals arrive at an understanding of all these things which today are still outside the grasp of so many. This requires true spiritual maturity, however. Eventually, individuals come to the point where they are told, or where they realize for themselves, the nature of the difficulties they brought upon themselves in the past. They may be given explanations of their previous lives, but not always so. For some it may be useful to know these things, for others it would only serve to impede their further progress. These are matters on which the divine spirit world decides, and each individual is allowed to have as much experience as he or she is capable of grasping. And so, individuals come into earthly life unburdened, and are thus able to make a new beginning. And a light shines for everyone, the light of the Redeemer which shows the way for each and all. It is the cross, on which all may support and steady themselves. Let me say in conclusion then that I have tried my best, even if with a little hesitancy in my account at times, to tell you something of what I have experienced here in the spiritual world. I have tried to give you some insight into the divine world, and it's my hope that I have carried out my task to the satisfaction of my senior brothers and sisters. And so I leave you with the Heavenly Father's blessing. Address by the Ascending Spirit Karen, received on 5 September 1962 in German through Beatrice Brunner, Hannah. One must earn one's place in heaven through one's own efforts. Personal report. 6 May 1964. God bless. My name is Hannah. I'd like to give you a brief summary of the last life I spent on earth. I had a son and a daughter. Life with my husband was not all good, but not all bad either. We never went without our daily bread since we owned our own business. We considered ourselves devout, worthy people. Our daughter was a nun, our son a priest. During my life I always believed that God would be very pleased with me for having given up my daughter to the convent, and my son to the priesthood. Because of this I expected my reward in the next life. I felt that having given up my two children to him, God would forgive me for a lot that I had done wrong, and that many of my faults would be excused. For that reason I often set myself up as better than the people around me, in other words, I would look down my nose at people rather a lot. However, in the spirit world I was told that I had made a habit of talking far too much and that I had created a lot of discord among the people around me. I had interfered a good deal in other people's affairs, too, and caused a lot of bad feelings. The picture I had created for myself of being specially rewarded on account of my children had thus come to nothing. That was my first disappointment when I arrived in the beyond. I was welcomed back by my parents. They told me, however, that they weren't able to remain with me, and so our conversation was only brief. After that, angels of God came to me and said, "Hannah, hurry up now, it's time for us to take you to the plane where you will be living. You will be living with others and you'll have your own tasks to complete there." As I mentioned before, I was disappointed that I hadn't been rewarded in any way for having given my children up to God. I told the angels that my daughter was in the convent and my son was a priest, and asked them if this didn't entitle me to some favorable recognition. "No," they replied. "We are not going to talk about that, rather you will have to face the retribution you have deserved. First you must recognize all the mistakes you have made." "But they are both praying for me, as much as they can," I replied. "Surely I ought to be able to benefit from their prayers." Their answer was that when the time was right, my children's prayers would help me, but for the present it was up to me to prove what I was capable of, here, in the spiritual world. Now I have to say that the world I was led into was not a particularly beautiful place. In my earthly life I had lived in far nicer surroundings, I thought. Here I seemed to be in a village with houses, some bigger, some smaller, and also buildings which I took to be factories. I was at once led into one of these large factory-like buildings, but this one turned out to be something else. Inside there were countless numbers of beings. They all lived here, though this was not where they worked elsewhere. I was shown to a room which I was to share with others. There were about 15 of us. It disturbed me a great deal that I should have to live with all these others. They were all so noisy and restless, busily recounting stories about their past, or talking about the work they did, and there was I, wanting nothing more than to talk about my life. But they didn't seem to be listening to me, or taking any notice of me. The ones who had been the longest in the room dominated the conversation, and the others simply listened to them. I tried doing the same, tried to talk about my life in my loudest voice, but they still paid me not the slightest attention. I was also told that I ought to go out to the fields and work with the others. I thought about this and said to myself, "No, surely, one doesn't work in heaven. No way did I want to go out to the fields and work. I thought I could find somewhere else to go." And so that was what I did, while the others went off to work like clockwork. When they came back and relaxed, they would tell one another all about their experiences. But listening to what was said, I never got the impression that there was any need for me to work in the fields too. That was something I simply couldn't grasp. And so as no one seemed to bother much about me, I found places of my own to go to. When the others came back from work and I returned with them into the room, no one asked me where I had been or why I hadn't appeared at work with them. So I didn't think it was necessary for me to work. I was much more interested to find out who else was in this spirit world. I wanted to search out beings I had known, and relatives of mine, and this is exactly what I did. I saw them outside the house and I also met them inside. I knew, you see, that they, too, had left the earth world quite some time before, and I was naturally keen to meet them. I wanted to know whether they had to go to work as well. A number of them said they did, that they were carrying out the work that had been assigned to them, but the rest seemed to have fallen into idle and slothful habits much as myself. They, too, had the feeling that it was unfair that, after a hard life on earth, they should have to continue working in the spirit world. So we seized this freedom and simply didn't do any work at all. Then, while I was out looking for souls I had known from my life before, I met two beings who had lived quite close to our own home. It was Franciscan from the mill, and her husband. I greeted her and said I thought they evidently hadn't made any more progress than I had myself, for they had tried to be very pious people in their earthly lives, just as I had. Now Franziska and her husband were actively involved in work in this world, and they urged me to follow their example. They told me that in the spirit world, where one is closer to God than on earth, one is expected to show even more obedience than on earth. If I didn't take up the appointed work, I would never be able to leave this place, they said reprovingly. They also said that I should be ashamed of how I looked. I hadn't thought that way at all, since so far I hadn't even looked at myself. I really attached no value to outer appearances, especially my own. I could see, however, that Franziska and her husband were certainly very smartly turned out. To be sure, they had been very devout people in their earthly lives, and as they said, they were now involved in work in this world. They urged me to come with them and work, too. God demanded it of me, they said, and I ought not to insist on having things all my own way. But I didn't go with them. I told them instead that during the time they were at work I would devote myself to prayer, and that God would appreciate my prayer just as much as he would any work I might otherwise do. They responded that they would be spending time in prayer, too, that indeed they were obliged to do so, but that, besides prayer, they also had to work. And then Franziska said, "See to it that you do something to improve your appearance. We have earned the way we look now through the work we have done." Of course, they had entered the spiritual world a good while before I had, and therefore had plenty of opportunities to build up credit for themselves. So, I wanted now to know what one had to do to gain a better appearance. They explained that this could only be done through work, through carrying out whatever work was assigned to one in exactly the way one was told to carry it out, and, in addition, by placing oneself in the service of those around one. They were being of service to me, they said, inasmuch as they were now explaining to me the necessity of my conducting myself differently in this new world, and of my starting to do something to improve my appearance. Franziska made me look at my shoes and said, "Just look at your shoes, Hannah. I never saw you with shoes like that when we were on Earth. Aren't you embarrassed and ashamed to be going around in such shoes?" "God gave me these clothes," I answered. "What am I supposed to do?" "You can at least do something to make yourself look better," she replied. "Anyone in your position," they said together, "has to earn these things, item by item. For goodness sake, take a look at your shoes." Franziska exclaimed again. "Yes indeed, I hadn't noticed before. I had shoes on, good enough, but they had no laces. I just stood in them as they were. Naturally enough, it wasn't possible to walk very elegantly in shoes one couldn't even fasten. But what did I care? I had been given these shoes, but, I thought, being here, it would be normal to be given whatever heaven wanted one to be given. At least try working," said Franziska to me, "so you can earn yourself a pair of shoelaces, if nothing else." "How should I manage that?" I asked. "Precisely by working," came the answer again. "I would definitely be given something," they said, "if I went to work with them. I wasn't ready to make the decision to work, and here I must make it clear that nothing in my former life on earth had prepared me for work of this kind. I hadn't needed to work all that hard, for there had been others working for our family, and for that reason I simply had no desire to work. I just wasn't able to act in any other way. I held back, therefore, thinking while I did so that it would be enough if others did this work, and that I would surely be given some other kind of work which I would enjoy. But nothing of the sort happened. No alternative to going out to the fields was proposed, and going out to the fields was something I definitely did not want to do." At this point Franziska came looking for me to give me some news. The news was that she had been visited by Barbara, the Barbara I had known so well, the medial woman, who had been very poor. I had known Barbara very well, as she had often come to see me, but I hardly ever bought anything from her. "Ah, yes, that Barbara. I remember her well," I responded. "Barbara is here and would like to visit you," Franziska continued. "She wanted to see me. She is very beautiful and gracious now," Franziska continued. "She doesn't live in the same world as we." "Barbara the peddler doesn't live here?" I said in an astonished voice. "Where does she live, then? What has she earned for herself, then? How is it she has a better life than we do? We were such devout people, weren't we? Do you know what I have learned? Franziska replied. God was better pleased with her than with us. She did more that was pleasing to God than either you or I. What? I responded. But she was just a peddler. What about it? Said Franziska. You must have forgotten, she had 22 children, you know. Don't you think that with so many children she ought to have her place in heaven? She had to be a peddler. She had no bread or milk for her children, there was nothing for her to do but be a peddler. And her husband earned too little, they all had to go peddling together. Of course, she was forced to be a peddler, I could see that well enough. But I continued my protest nonetheless, and do you mean to say she has such a good life here because she had so many children? Do you mean she has earned herself a place in heaven just because of that? I went on, I had 2 children and gave both of them up to God. Does it count for nothing that I have a daughter who is a nun and a son who is a priest? Is that worth nothing at all? Well, apparently not, Franziska answered. It seems Barbara achieved more in spiritual terms than either you or I, and then she began encouraging me once again to start work, saying that if Barbara were to visit me I would be ashamed of myself. I need only see what Barbara looked like, and what I looked like. Fine, good. Let's see what happens. Perhaps Barbara can help me, too. After all, I did buy things from her now and then. And so, Barbara came to visit me. I was speechless. I couldn't find the words to speak to her. Finally I managed to say, but you were only a peddler. Yes, she said. That's right, I was a peddler. But God has rewarded me for all the hardship, for the sacrifices I made, and for the love I gave my children, and for my courage, too. God has given me recognition for all that. And I always lived an honest life, she continued, even though I had my 22 children, indeed, that may well have been so. But I still couldn't understand how one could have such a fine appearance now simply by having had so many children. Well, Barbara didn't continue her conversation with me. Instead, she presented me with a pair of shoelaces. Here, she said. Tie your shoes up so you can walk better. She added that she would return to pay me another visit to see how I was getting on. And so, I laced up my shoes with the laces I had been given and went off once more to visit my former neighbor there, Franziska. As soon as I spied her again, I could see quite clearly that she was wearing a very beautiful shawl around her shoulders. Before my very eyes, she took the shawl off and folded it into an apron, as if to say, "You see, I look much nicer than you do." Whereupon I wanted to know how she got the shawl. "Barbara brought it for me," she answered. "I gave the odd thing to Barbara from time to time, too, you know," she added. "And for that you got this shawl from her, whereas I got only a pair of shoelaces. Maybe you will be given something else later on," she said, trying to console me. Well, I had to be content with this reply. Then, once again, Franziska urged me to come with her to work. But I simply couldn't make up my mind to do so. When I began once more to look round the village for newly arrived acquaintances, I met someone, I had already seen him in the distance, who was dressed in a very distinguished way. He came quickly over to me and straightaway engaged me in conversation, wanting to know my name and where I came from. I was somewhat taken aback, but this much was now clear to me: he was an angel, and I therefore had no option but to respond courteously. "Why aren't you at work?" he asked me. I was flustered by this and replied, "Well, after all, no one has taken me with them to work." Without a moment's hesitation, he took me by the hand and with the same rapid stride led me through the many surrounding streets and pathways out to a field. There I saw all the other beings with whom I lived in the large house, and saw how they all worked in this particular field. There were flowers, bushes, trees as well as stones, and everyone was busy digging and planting, not without, as it seemed, quite a bit of argument and discord. They were being taught what belonged where, and so forth, and for this the spirit ground had to be dug up and the flowers replanted. "Now," said the angel to me, That is your work, too. From now on you will be working here. I was new to this world, and I didn't dare contradict him or ask him why the spirit beings had to look after these plains and bushes. I had thought that in heaven everything would grow by itself. Why do they need the use of our hands for all this, I wondered to myself. The angel read my thoughts and answered, "You will receive instruction about these things once you have worked here for a while." Then I was shown the work I was to do. I could see that more and more brothers and sisters were constantly arriving, bringing with them plants and all sorts of other things besides. Everything seemed to be taking place according to some kind of precise order. Everything had to be planted exactly as we were told to plant it, precisely in accordance with the plans drawn up by the angel who was instructing me. Later on, I received formal instruction about these things. I was told, "Go back to the earthly world, go out across the fields, into a garden as well, and look at how the flowers are picked and the bushes trimmed. I observe these things, and look also at how the trees are felled." I didn't think there was anything special about this. There is life, spiritual life, in these flowers, in these bushes, I was told. In each one of these things, there is life. Because of what people have done, the plants will now wither, fall to the ground and die. Their life on earth has been severed. But the spiritual life of these plants can never be severed, and thus it is drawn into this plane, the level parallel to all biological growth and development on earth. All that people have to care for and see to, we in the beyond have to look after as well. We have to support and help the lower forms of life. Then I was told, "Later, but not till much later, you will experience for yourself how this life is transformed. Initially, however, life continues in the same spiritual form, and for this reason the plants are put into the spirit ground here. And so, my brothers and sisters had to work in the fields and I, too, now had to work with them. It took a long time before I was able to grasp the meaning of this work, however. Then I went to see Francisca again. She seemed pleased and said to me, 'It won't be long at all before you are given a new dress to wear if you keep on working as hard and as well as you have done so far.' 'I really don't mind what I look like,' I said. 'I have no particular desire to change my dress. I would much rather have something else. What would you prefer?' She wanted to know. 'Do you really think I could be happy living a communal life in that house, with all the others? That house that looks like a factory, where so many beings are crowded together with all their dreadful habits. It really is unpleasant. I will continue with my work, but I will be working to earn a house of my own.' 'It'll be a long time before you manage that,' Francisco answered. 'It's what I'm going to try to do,' I retorted. 'I'm off to work. I want my own house.' Now, at one time a festival was held. A little way outside the village there stood a large building, and it was there that we were asked to come for the festival events themselves. However, only those who had done a lot of work were permitted to take part in the festival, those who had distinguished themselves by the work they had done. I, moreover, had not been commended for my work and therefore was not given permission to attend the events. While the others streamed joyously into the building, singing and exulting as they went, I remained behind. I wanted so much to go though, and I thought it might still be possible for me to be let in. But I had no success. I was pushed to one side and told, 'You haven't done that much work yet, and you haven't done anything to distinguish yourself.' To this they added that it was high time I worked harder to win the recognition in question, and here they made some disparaging remarks about my appearance. So I went back to the house and waited until the others returned from the festival. On their return, I asked them to tell me what they had seen and done. They were all in very high spirits, having returned laden with presents. I could see, however, that they had merely been given various pieces of clothing and such like, nothing of any greater significance than a new jacket or a new dress. At that stage I wasn't able to see that what they had received was in fact an important reward. The rather severe angel came to find me again and urged me to apply myself with diligence to my work. As a matter of priority, he said. I was now to concentrate my efforts on getting myself a new dress. He stood before me and said, just see how you have neglected yourself, take a look at your clothes. How utterly shabby you look in your former life. You wouldn't have offered your hand to anyone dressed as you are now. Was this really so? I wondered.